Hi, welcome everyone. It is 3:32, 2 minutes behind already. Welcome to our panel, the X Factor USA, How It Got Social. What we're going to do is introduce everyone, share a couple of videos, give introduction of X Factor, and then we'll get into talking about, you know, telling the story of how social was integrated into X Factor in various ways and some of the learnings this team has. This team represents the producers, the broadcasters, Twitter partners that executed social into X Factor. And just by way of hands, who here is related to TV in some way? Okay, so about half the audience. And are the rest digital? Are okay. Who saw the X Factor? How many people saw it?
That's not bad.
Okay, good. All right, good. So there's some familiarity. Okay, with that, let's start introductions. Don, we'll start with you.
I'm Don Wilcox. I'm the Vice President and General Manager of Branded Entertainment at Fox. My team is responsible for building all of the web, mobile, and app and social experiences for all of our primetime shows. So Fox.com, XFactorUSA.com, AmericanIdol.com, and so on.
I'm Jill Johnson, head of digital and interactive for Psycho, which is Simon, I always have to explain that, which is Simon Cowell's company. Now it makes sense, right? And joint venture with Sony Music. So I head up new business for Psycho and also work with all these guys and our partners on X Factor and America's Got Talent and others.
I'm Sam Decker, co-founder and CEO of Mass Relevance. We're actually a local company that partnered with the production team here in Twitter to execute some of the things you'll see.
Hi, I'm Olivier Delfos. I'm the VP of Interactive at Fremantle Media. Fremantle is one of the production companies of X Factor. We also produce American Idol, a bunch of big game shows. We're a big global production company. I oversee all of our digital initiatives, including social, working with all the people here on this panel.
Hi, I'm Chloe Sladen. I lead a team called the Media Team at Twitter, and we do a couple things. We work with our most high-profile and influential tweeters across mediums, so not just celebrities, but politicians, journalists, a whole range of folks, as well as media and entertainment companies to tell compelling stories on and through Twitter. A big focus for us is integrating with traditional media, so when you see hashtags on air or you see talent live tweeting a TV show, that's sometimes been initiated by our team. And really, the goal of my team is to improve the quality of the content on Twitter. And I work with all of these guys a lot and a bunch of people in this room, too.
So that lets show the...
Okay, so just to give you guys a little context, for those who didn't catch X Factor or missed the integration, I'm going to show you a little bit of video, and we have a few other pieces of video we'll show throughout to illustrate. But here's an example of how Twitter was pulled into the live shows. This is the host, Steve Johnson, describing the volume and showcasing the Twitter conversation.
Let's check in with our Twitter wall, shall we? You guys have been incredibly busy. Tell us, which judge do you agree with the most, or least? Use the hashtags on the screen right now to get on Twitter and let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Now, here's the last performance. It's the final singer of the over 30s.
So that's just an example. We'll show you a few more. We'll give you an example of the voting as well. But that's an example of how throughout the live shows, that was early on in the season with 2.8 million tweets since the beginning of the season about the X Factor. But that's just a first sample of the things we tried to do together.
Good. Okay. So what we want to do is try to follow the thread of the story of how X Factor got social. And so to do that, I think we give some context to how the production works and some background on the X Factor. So want to share how does we have several producers here. How does that all work? Just in terms of Fremantle and Psycho and Broadcaster. Just for those maybe not as familiar, how does that relationship work?
Sure. So on this show. Fremantle and Psycho are the producers of the X Factor. X Factor is a big global format, so huge rating success in many, many territories around the world. It's a top show, five countries in Europe, and in the UK, it's going into eighth season. So it's a huge format for us, and bringing it here was very important. So. Fremantle works with Psycho as the kind of the co-owner of the format, and then obviously we work with Fox as our local broadcaster here in the U.S. And that includes doing everything around marketing of the show, social initiatives, devising the strategy that we want to incorporate to really bring the shows to the next level, because we'll talk a little bit more about what our objectives were, and they were really ambitious. So that's kind of the general structure of how it works. I think in general how production companies and networks work is kind of fluid, and fortunately we had a really great relationship with between both of the production companies and Fox.
Anything to add, Don?
Yeah, I would just say that from a network perspective, sort of our classic model is we find great content, we use our marketing muscle to create a hit, and then we monetize that audience. And what we find is when we're able to really work closely with a production company on the content we're using to drive engagement that ultimately serves that monetization, we always get better results. And so we definitely were in a good situation with this show, in that we have history with these partners on other shows, and it was very collaborative and synergistic, I would say.
Great. So a little bit of background on The X Factor. How did it end up here? What were the expectations for the show? You know, how did it get in the very beginning? What was the context surrounding the show?
Jill, do you want to handle some of that, or I can
from a social perspective?
Well, just the show in general. So, when the show comes to USA, it's had some history. Is that right?
Yeah. So, The X Factor, as Olivier was alluding to, has really branched out around the world. There are a number of franchises that take on The X Factor, and then the U.S. alone is licensed in 100 some territories.
Yeah. So, there's 24 localized formats. So countries where they actually make their own X Factor, and that's kind of the model that both Fremantle and Psycho have. We travel successful formats around the world, and then we try to a certain extent to take all the learnings that we have from that, you know, where it originated, and transport that to all the various territories. So in the case of the X Factor, that was a format that was generated out of the UK. There was a tremendous amount of learnings, both not only how we produce the TV show, but what are some good best practices around social. Because if anybody has lived in the UK and experienced The X Factor, it is an absolute, like, you know, phenomenon. When the show airs, it has like over a 50% share, which is ridiculous. That means 50% or more of the country actually watched the TV show. So it's absolutely astounding. So we wanted to take some of those learnings that we have in other territories and then expand upon them and do new things, do first of its kind initiatives. So we'll talk some more about that. And then just really expand upon what we did in the social space.
So what were some of the stated, when it's coming here, what were some of the stated objectives for the show?
Well, Simon definitely, wanted to, it was a good time to bring it here. As you can see, if anyone's familiar with the UK version, there are a number of things that actually other shows out there adopted in their first season last year, if you get the hint of which show I'm talking about. They took on some of the things that worked very successfully for us. And Simon also, his objective was he wants to appeal to a younger, get that younger demographic in a show that really speaks to them. And part of that is, to be involved in the engagement places where that demographic is. So he definitely challenged us to step it up, to find new ways to engage with an audience. And that was really, we went out there and tried to find new ways to do it, both in show and, online.
Okay, so you have something to add?
Yeah, I would just say the ambitions for the show from a viewership standpoint were equaled by the ambitions for the show in the social space. There was no bones about that in terms of the demands that were put upon us.
Mm-hmm. And Chloe, you got involved early. From Twitter's perspective, what are your objectives?
Yeah, and by the way, it was... although this is now set a standard for other TV shows, we hadn't had a partner approach us quite at the level that X Factor, Psycho, and Fox approached us in terms of the commitment to figuring this out and innovating together. So we started conversations early on and had a lot of big ambitions, which, we were able to achieve some of them, but many more hopefully to come in the next season. So from our perspective, it was a chance to, Twitter obviously has only been around for 3 to 4 to 5 years. It's having a significant impact on TV, but as much as we talk about interactive television, television. The most successful form of interactive television has been around for over 10 years, and it's voting. And yet Twitter wasn't a part of that. So for us, it was to learn and experiment with Twitter as a voting platform. In this case, it needed to be a private voting platform. We can talk more about what kind of challenges that presented to Twitter. So that was one piece of it. And then I'd say even the bigger piece is finding ways to weave the shared experience on Twitter creatively into the show. How can you create tension and meaningful content out of the fact that you have millions of people experiencing and sharing this together on Twitter? And so hashtags is just the beginning of that. That's the signal that the conversation is on. And you can see in certain shows we are sort of trying to weave the story through Twitter in interesting ways. But X Factor really was the first to dive in deeply and say, what's the bigger story in the millions of tweets that are happening? So that was a deep motivation for us too.
Great. So we talk about sort of the objectives, be social and how that be part of the show. Yet I think the whole team and our company certainly has experienced this, and I know Chloe has across other shows. Buy-in is a challenge. Getting, you know, there's such cross-functional teams and executive buy-in. What were some of the learnings and challenges and best practices of getting buy-in to the strategy, which we'll talk about?
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so it was an interesting one for us because to the objectives, we saw an opportunity here to really kind of conduct a grand experiment and embrace the open web, have a very distributed footprint, do things way more socially than ever before. And that was really top to bottom in our organization, a driving motivation. However, we do, with shows of this type, competition-based shows, there are FCC compliance issues to think about. The show must be fair to an auditable level. And so that involves ensuring that every contestant has equal time, equally favorable light, that we're not publishing information that could be perceived as predictive of the outcome or in any way influence how people might vote based on what they're perceiving. So there are a lot of sensitivities around, you know, our goal was to have social conversation flowing, you know, inbound, outbound, and all around. Just we really wanted a lot of conversation, but that also kind of sounds like chaos. So how do you control that and bring a little bit of order and safety to it? That was a big concern. The other one for us was, given that this is an import from the UK, the showrunners aren't as familiar with our big country and its many time zones. And so that presented some challenges in terms of spoilers and how we find a way to enable real-time discourse without really spoiling it for people. And I think we managed to get to a good place with the standards piece by setting some ground rules up front for the contestants who we evangelized the importance of social for them to reach their fan bases. And so they had some guardrails to stay within, and ended up working out really well. Mm-hmm. And then on the spoiler front, I think what we've realized is that the conversations are happening anyway, and people are becoming conditioned to the notion of if you don't want a spoiler, don't get on Twitter while the show's on. So we don't necessarily put a spoiler out ourselves, but we also have to realize we can't really control it. That is what the community wants to do.
Yeah, the other challenge, too, is this being a UK created show, they don't operate under the same fairness rules in the UK that they do here. And what made our show challenging is that the judges as become mentors of specific categories, you know, the over 30s, boys, girls, groups. So they themselves are showing favoritism. And that was something we had to get past, you know, to make it they're doing it. But as far as, like, the official channels and anything that we would do from a sponsor partner standpoint and from our official channels, we have to stay in a fair state.
Okay. Yeah, I would say just from the producer level, just very quickly, it was all about education. So, yeah. You know, our producers were very aware of the value of social, but they didn't really necessarily know how to implement that. So that was our role at first. And the nice thing was that after we showed them this, and this is going from the very beginning, I remember calling Chloe and saying, can you send me some video so at least I can show somebody a video of what you're telling me that I'm trying to communicate to them, which I probably did a terrible job at. But that's kind of how the process worked. And then after we did a couple things that were smaller in the show, then they liked it and they did more, and it was just kind of that gradual process, so that now when we go into next season, we're all very excited about what we'll be able to accomplish.
Right. I think the other thing is, too, is that it's a live show. It's a live, breathing show. Anything can happen. We don't know what. Judges can be on talking too long. Something, you know, literally within minutes, we can be 5 minutes over. And that show has to be slotted exactly the way it's supposed to be. So we could have something two or three times planned within the show and something be pulled. So we had to be very flexible in how we were going to execute this.
And Olivia, as Chloe showed that video, we saw the visualization up front. There's creative as part of the production of the show. How did you get creative buy-in to what was actually going to execute?
So that was tricky, because not only was there a logistical, technical implementation that had never been done in any of these shows before. So how do you actually go from concept to what you see on screen? You know, we had to put in a technical workflow, so I work with Sam's team to implement that. But what is the right visual that matches with the show design and actually how they're telling the story? So that process actually was a little bit difficult, because it was kind of like putting the cart before the horse, because we couldn't actually... They're very visual. This is what we've realized about the producers. They need to see something to really understand it. So we actually had to build things and then iterate on them, as opposed to just give them a mock-up that had a design of what something might look like on screen. That actually wasn't enough for them. So fortunately, one of the great things about working with Mass Relevance is that the development, that iteration cycle, was like hours. It wasn't days.
We don't like to advertise that, but...
Sorry, Sam.
You're too modest.
But that makes a huge difference when they want something different from the rehearsal, for later in the show and then later in the day.
Oh, yeah. There were a number of occasions we get on the phone and it's like, we got to change this in an hour, or it's not going in. So very flexible. Good vendors.
All right. So... let's talk about the strategy. I think there's three parts we've talked about. And, Chloe, if you have any video that you want to bring up related to this. But we talked a little bit about the voting. We talked about the visualization, which you saw a little bit. Also some, contestant, sort of the activation of people in the show participating in that. So let's talk a little bit about the voting strategy and sort of what was, what worked, what didn't, what were the takeaways from that, and results.
So I'll frame the challenges for voting. So for various reasons, the voting needed to be private. There were concerns about spoilers for the West Coast. There was concerns about whether Twitter voting would be representative of general voting. But as you guys know, Twitter is a public platform. The majority of our content is public. So the concept of a private voting is something we're trying to figure out how to make Twittery. And hopefully by next year, we'll have some interesting evolutions in this. For this experiment, and we believe, and this is something we try and share with all of our partners, in an iterative approach. You can't, if you try and make it perfect the first time out, you're not going to, learn enough. So we had voting through private messaging on Twitter, through the direct message function. That's how we solved it. Now, that was the best way to solve the problem. There are constraints to that. It's not part of the natural public Twitter conversation. It's not going to naturally go viral. So this is what it looked like on air, and then I'll show you the microsite as well. So there were calls to action. This is also fairness rules that you had to have consistent calls to action across all the voting mechanisms at the end of every contestant's performance. I'll let Don share more about the fun stuff. So here, this was amidst the phone numbers to call, the text messaging. Here's the Twitter call to action. And when you went to that URL, now that URL is too long. It's difficult to remember. This needs to be, you go to Twitter and you find it immediately. But in this case, when you did, you'd go to this microsite, and you could just, it was a simple way. When you clicked on vote, it would pop up. It would either then sign you up, take you through a sign-up flow, or it would pop you up into a DM message. All you had to do was say, click it. It did an automatic follow to the @TheXFactorUSA, because to send a DM to an account, you have to be following that account. So it was actually pretty seamless once you got there. But you can already see a couple of challenges, right? A difficult URL and a part of Twitter that is not our mainstream product. But we learned tons, and there was great engagement on voting, and it grew significantly throughout the season. So it was a great experiment to learn and then to come back to the team to figure out, okay, how do we keep making this simpler and smoother?
Did you also... Also, we did have messages that went out to people
right.
who did vote.
Yeah, so some of the ways we were trying to handle or augment the private component and the sort of weaknesses of having it being private on Twitter was the at the X Factor USA. That account would send an at reply to voters, and the at replies were sort of sequenced by the number of followers you had. So anyone could get it, but if you had a higher number of followers, you were more likely to get an at reply with some funny, snarky, insightful little comment saying, thanks for voting, sometimes a link to special behind-the-scenes content. The hope was people would then retweet those to, again, remind people it's possible to vote and to share and sort of spread the word.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing about this particular voting method was that, and we implemented this on another voting method within our app, our mobile application, which was touch voting. So just there was a picture on screen, you touch it, and it would pre-populate the short code and just send the vote. Both this and the Twitter voting method had incredibly high engagement numbers per unique voter, and that's obvious because you're just pressing a picture of somebody. But for voting methods that have been fairly traditional for the past 10 years, that's actually a really interesting discovery for us as we move forward and explore more, more voting methods and different, ways to approach that.
More voting methods.
More. Anything to add on the voting front from you guys?
No, I think you covered it, actually.
Okay. Jill, talk about anything around sort of what it's like to get activation and interaction with the contestants and people of the show. What were some of the best practices or the strategy there?
Well, I mean, first of all, the goal is Psycho... which is Simon's company, is also has a record label division. So our best interest is, some of these artists coming out of our shows like this and America's Got Talent and others, is that we'll be fostering new talent to put out there. And so it's really important for the contestants coming in that they learn how to build their fan bases so that they can really... own their fans and grow their careers. It's in their best interest. And out of this, actually, our contestants were, we provided training for them, but for the most part, they were on their own. They spoke in their own voice. They were very participatory in the special hashtags that we'll talk about. How we came up with that for in show. It was really a great thing to see, and you're seeing many of them still, such as Chris Renee, who has a new single out today, by the way, and is on Ellen. You can watch it when you leave the panel. We signed five artists out of the X Factor this year, and that's pretty amazing. And they're across our Sony Music labels, Columbia and Epic. So that was very important to work that way. And also, what was great about this show is, as star-powered as the judging panel is, everybody wanted to participate in this. And, so from Simon to Nicole to Paula to L.A., everybody was involved in their own voice about the X Factor and talking through commercial breaks, talking through the week. And they participated in a number of things with their contestants. So it was such a great group effort that worked.
Let's talk about the hashtags and how, the evolution of the hashtags, how to get people involved. A lot of shows have hashtags burned in. No, X Factor did. But there was more. There was the visualizations. There was call-outs. Talk about how that evolved and what worked.
Should I jump in? So at the very beginning, we were just trying to establish the right show hashtag. And our general rule of thumb for all partners is keep it simple. I'll give you an example. Clarence House, the royal family for the royal wedding last year, they wanted and tweeted out the hashtag for the royal wedding as RH2011. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, because there's going to be another wedding in 2012 and 2013. I mean, there's only one royal wedding at that moment in time. So we had to send them the data that showed that while they had managed to send a few people off using that hashtag, 90% of the tweets were using hashtag royal wedding. People go to the simplest, most natural. This is natural language, right? So it's a rule that sometimes can be tough. So these guys very logically had the problem of a UK show on at the same time, right?
Just different days on the week.
Different days, but same, you know, overlap of seasons. So they wanted to start with XFUSA. Totally logical. Put it up on the screen, and indeed, anytime you put a hashtag on screen, you're going to drive some tweeting. But again, we pulled the data. The majority were using hashtag XFactor. And the way we were able to support them in making sure we could separate the data was just by looking, making sure we knew Wednesday and Thursday nights at a certain time when the UK is fast asleep. You know, the conversation at that moment is clearly about X Factor USA. So are any conversation about the judges or the contestants. So there are ways we can still work around those concerns. The most important rule is to stick with the most simple hashtag. And then let me just show you a little bit of data here, too. What you're seeing here is the total number of tweets per show. Each airing of the show, the blue graphs are the taped shows, and the white ones are the live shows. And it's the live shows where the integrations really started to take off. You had a burned-in hashtag in the taped shows, but then, and there might have been one or two Mad Lib hashtags. A Mad Lib hashtag, which are great for younger skewing viewers, is a call to action embedded in the hashtag itself. So an example is the one you saw at the top of this conversation, hashtag I am Simon, I am, you know, I am LA. You know, basically it's saying, who do you identify with? And it prompts a higher quality tweet. But you're seeing a doubling in the conversation happening once the show goes live, once the real activations start happening in the show. And most importantly, when those giant screens came up saying there have been 2.4 million tweets and counting, and here's the hashtag, we saw an immediate spike in conversation. The Twitter conversation, literally, we'd be in our control room, our little sort of war room at Twitter, and it was fun because we'd be having tweets coming out in real time, and whoosh, as soon as it was on, it was up and going for a while and sustained for a while as well. It's just, it's a known rule. Put a good integration on air. Put any integration on air, you're going to drive tweeting. You can get to 10x that when you have calls to action, when you're actually showing the Twitter conversation in creative ways in show.
Yeah, I think the actual percentage increase was 600%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when you saw a visualization that had a hashtag, the tweets, not necessarily with that hashtag, just tweets around the show, attached to seeing a visualization was up 600%.
Yeah, just to add something, we see this across many integrations that we do, is because people get the sense that they are part of that conversation, the influence factor, that they want to participate. And sometimes they actually see, hey, I could get my tweet on screen, or I can see a visual, I'm part of that 2 million conversation. And they realize, more so than just putting the hashtag on there, that they're contributing to that, and that pulled them in. So
maybe I can show this is sort of, I'd say, what we were all aiming for in terms of bringing Twitter to the show, was to actually add tension and better storytelling to the show, increase, you know, bring its own version of storytelling. So let me show you. This is where I think we all feel we got close.
Do you want to set this up?
Sure. Yep.
So, when I look at that. Yeah, so what Chloe's going to show you in a second is that the first video that you guys saw that had actually those hashtags, I am Simon. So that was a call to action to essentially, more or less, vote for your favorite judge. And what we did was, what you're going to see is the result of that call to action that was done later in the show, like Act 7 or something like that, that showed people real time what was happening with regards to those hashtags. So
and we were also collecting not just the hashtags, but general conversation about all four of the judges. Yeah. So it included hashtags plus the general conversation.
Yeah,
and including it was positive and negative sentiment. We didn't measure it by sentiment.
Right. This is just pure conversation. All right, so let's play it.
Track of your tweets. You've been talking up the judges. An absolute storm. Take a look at this. Oh, it seems that L.A. Reid is the most popular judge at the moment.
Can I first of all ask for a recount, please? Because that doesn't sound right to me. Irritating. Okay, start tweeting me, please. Okay.
Simon joined Twitter after that show.
That 9 p.m., 10 p.m. that night, I get a call from his head of media being like, we're ready.
No, you really did.
And it was also part, it was really part of our plotting, actually. We're like, we know Simon wants to join. We're like, well, I know the way to get him on air. Make sure he knows he's not the king of the conversation. Sure enough, a week later.
Multiple strategies.
And now he's got how many followers?
1.7.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, he was open to it. It was just a matter of kind of getting it to happen.
Actually, are you showing that other visual too that we did? Just show the flexibility of the visuals that we were creating.
Oh, I don't think I have that.
Actually,
I don't
think you can speak to that, Sam.
Yeah, well, there were several visuals. You see one in the first video that Chloe showed. One was just the general volume, and this is a great example of where when you're trying to get executive buy-in, once they start to see it and it's working and they're getting 600% increase in volume, they get more excited. So what we did is we continued to progress within the live shows and did different visualizations throughout the show. So then the second one you saw the judge voting, and then another one like this one. And so the first one you saw general, now you see judge, and then the next one was a different visualization where they took up the whole stage,
silhouettes
of each of the judges, yeah. And what was the volume. And so then it became so integrated into the entire, this is just one flat, but actually in the look and feel of the show, having silhouettes of each judge and what their volume was became like a big infographic.
Yeah, and that's a big challenge, I think, in general. Something we work with Master Relevance on a lot and with our partners is, what is the right way to visualize stuff? So it doesn't feel like you're in math class. And I don't think we quite nailed it with this. The silhouettes were much better. They felt human. You know, they represented the judges. It showed them, you know, the size change based on the amount of conversation. But this is why data visualization, like data visualization artists, this field, I think, is critical, because we've got to humanize and make what is data actually human. I mean, behind every one of those tweets is somebody screaming, shouting, showing emotion about the show. So we're still early in this, and Master Relevance has been evolving the art form in great ways, but I think we've still got a long way to go.
I think you're definitely going to see amazingly creative ways to do this. And like Chloe said, I think we were somewhat constrained just by time and
new show,
the
new show.
And the fact that it was a new show, and even something like this where you can't really tell why that equalizer means what it means. That's why the percentage is so valuable. But even that, people get an understanding that does indicate some sense of a volume, a real time volume. Yeah. But there's a million ways you can do this.
Yeah,
that's
and,
the cool
and,
thing.
And the way this worked is that the height and the speed of the equalizer represented the speed of the tweets per minute. So a lot of things are measured in tweets per minute. This is a percentage of total tweets between the four judges. So there's lots of different ways to visualize it. The key thing is a couple takeaways for us. One is that it has to match the look and feel of the whole creative. Again, you got to get buy-in on the creative process. So to the extent that the visualization fits the creative, and it's also moving for TV, their movement is important. And to get buy-in, we have to show that movement. And then secondly, how, to Chloe's point, how does the visualization play into the editorial and the story of the show? It can't just be, hey, look at this, and then it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, and then go back to the show. So that's important. So let's talk about, we talked a little bit about time zone consideration, and also, Olivia or Jill, the call-outs by the host. How key was that? Because I think sometimes that gets cut or not represented well.
Jill, do you want to?
It just brings back so many memories. Well, I mean, the hashtags are important. I mean, it's, you know, we definitely worked with production as to, you know, there were different feels and themes for every week. So it was very important for us to come up with something that would fit along that theme. But also we wanted to have, you know, it's like, what is the language out in, for lack of a better word, social sphere? Not, you know, it's like there's a way that we, you know, speak on the X Factor on air, but there's a way that we wanted to relate to our audience online. And so we would come up with, there were a number of hashtags we came up with, the IMs, the O-snaps, you know, I'd almost have to think back as to what they
going
were.
Going home was one.
Yeah, there were quite a few of them, and it's, you know, getting that buy-in, also making sure that it was in script accurately, and making sure that we were feeding it early. You know, there was a lot of activity around the X Factor online that really supported the show. So there was conversation going on in the afternoon. We had a pre-live stream show an hour before that was sponsored by Pepsi. And we were able to be seeding during that time, and sometimes we were trending. Those hashtags were trending before we even got to on air, which was pretty tremendous.
Yeah, that's great.
So it was a nice time.
Yeah, I think it's important to try to editorialize that as much as possible. So,
Don, share a little bit about, so both for this show, but as well as how Fox views this now. Does this translate into interest in doing these kind of things across other shows, or is this really specific per show? So as we think about social TV expanding, how do you view that?
Well, we're definitely all about social TV. We have, I believe it's around 150 million Facebook fans, for example, so we are the kind of the most social network.
Closer.
Yeah, we are arguably the most social network in aggregate and are looking to innovate all the time. We see it as an incredibly important engagement mechanism. It expands the creative palette for our showrunners. But depending on whether it's a scripted show or a reality program or a competition show, it really the opportunities vary. And I think that a show like this is probably the most fertile ground for exploration and bringing the fans in. That was a big goal of ours this year. In addition to sort of that distributed footprint and significant social presence, the whole idea was fan empowerment and fan recognition. And so social was key in enabling, you know, fans to do that. And that the thing that was great about the Twitter piece, you know, we had a lot of stuff going on, whether it was Facebook or our own community and various things we were able to do where fans were actually voting online to influence events in show. But the Twitter piece was really something to watch, the real-time reaction. I've never really seen anything like it, and it was incredibly exciting, and we definitely want to continue to pursue that across the board in alternative series and also looking at it where it makes sense in scripted.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the results, and then after this we're going to open it up to questions and just so formulate your question, and there's a microphone in the middle. That's where we'll do the questions. So let's talk about results, all of this strategy, the voting, the visualizations, the call-outs, the contestants. What was the results of this?
Sure, I can speak to some of them, and then I'll let the other guys obviously speak to it. You know, over the course of the season, we had over 15 million tweets, which in 3 months is really great, and I think that galvanized lots of other stuff that we did, including viewing of content online. You know, on YouTube, we have over 200 million views now, and I'm sure a lot of those were shared via social methods. The show was constantly trending. On any particular show night, we had it over 20 trending topics.
About 35 in our finale.
Yeah, 35 in our finale. So we really kind of ambushed the field, I would say. And that was a result of a very coordinated and aggressive effort amongst everybody that was part of the social team. And then I think what we really did is we kind of organized our approach in a way that I had never done before, and I'm not sure if we had done before with the network in terms of how the contestants play in. And ultimately what that did result in was, and that we're very proud of, is that it really has created stars of these people that Psycho's picked up. I mean, those five people have over, you know, 150,000 Twitter followers and countless Facebook fans.
Each.
And that makes a huge difference for them in their lives as musical artists, and definitely has a reciprocal value for the show. So, I mean, those are definitely some of the key results on our end.
You guys have anything else to add?
Yeah, I would say, well, the social success, I mean, it was undeniable. We got great coverage. It drove enormous earned media value. Our sponsors benefited from that. There are studies published around the brand lift that sponsors enjoyed as a result of all this activity. So we felt like it was really successful, and we were pretty much high-fiving all around mm-hmm. when all was said and done. And I think that we learned a lot around the orchestration of all these pieces and how to really coordinate our editorial machine with a dedicated social team. You know, we had to have feet on the street really in there embedded with the show, getting that sort of insider point of view and evangelizing with the contestants, and all of that kind of was really a great education, and I think we'll continue to fine-tune that as we go. But it was the first show where we really put that level of resources into it and that level of attention, and kind of treated it as such a key component of the overall blend of what we were doing from a content and marketing mm-hmm. perspective. Mm-hmm. So it was great to see that succeed.
Go ahead, John.
The one interesting thing that I love seeing is that we had, obviously you would see a lot of spike lift, you know, of conversation on our two show nights per week, but our 5 days that we were not in show equaled what we did in that show, in those two shows. So that speaks a lot to the team on the amount of content that was created, the strategy around how we were engaging with our fans around it. And still, our numbers are still growing out of season. And we do have social media team on it, you know, very actively. And we're still talking about it's the way that we're also recycling our content from last season, and we're also going into auditions this week. And it will be here in Austin if you happen to be from Austin and you want to sing. Next week, I can probably give you all the details.
We didn't ask that question. Any contestants in the in the room?
Yeah. So the conversation continues. Whether you want to be on the X Factor, whether you don't, there's still things about it that emotionally pump you. And that was the fun part about the X Factor. It's like there's a lot of people speaking a lot of opinions, you know, positive and negative, and everybody, you know, people like to engage in that. And it's like the X Factor has a very different feel to it, I think, from a number of other shows. Format-wise, it can start to look familiar to the average person, but the engagement pieces feel different.
Yeah, a couple things you guys pointed out that I'll reinforce with other clients we work with is that the integrations that you do apart from the shows and what you do digitally, that we see a lot of convergence happening right now between digital and TV. So it's not just it's happening on TV. People are going to multiple places, and so the integration to encourage conversation happening digital really drives that between show conversation. And then Don, you talked a little bit about sponsorships. We certainly see with media companies that social sells, that having some element of social to a show or your site, it carries a premium and gets advertisers' attention. And I'm sure that's feeding into the next year in terms of selling sponsorships with a level of a social engagement much higher than just a passive broadcast. So very interesting. So anything else anyone wants to add? Otherwise, we'll open up to questions. Okay.
Can you hear me,
Kai? Yep.
Yep.
It's not on.
It's not on, but we can hear you.
I'll just shout it then.
Yeah.
I'm very interested in some of the business drivers behind this then. So what was the impact on viewing figures and on advertising revenue as a result of deploying some of these kind of social mechanics that we've talked about?
Do you want to put... I can put that in a little bit of context.
Maybe that's just not for X Factor, but for any show that's deployed.
So I think many producers I talk to, now that we're 3 years into a concerted Twitter and TV effort, there's a gut feel that this is the most scalable word-of-mouth platform, and everybody believes word-of-mouth is one of the single most powerful ways to drive tune-in and awareness and sampling. So I think there's just, you know, when you talk to showrunners or producers who are now used to looking at the conversation on Twitter while their shows are premiering in the East Coast and getting that immediate feedback mechanism, when I talk to the heads of research of the networks, there's a feeling like there's something meaningful here. How to actually quantify that, how to actually know how much tune-in is driven, at, you know, what levels, what levers to pull, the whole causation challenge. We're digging into that with Nielsen as well as other partners to really understand it deeply across hundreds of shows, across demos, across genres. So nothing to share on that yet. Some of the early little pieces we can share is that, and this is rational to the way Twitter behaves, that the most powerful, when you add Twitter into the model of ratings and what drives ratings, because Nielsen has looked at social media as a whole, there you might have seen some social media studies they've done. Those are really blogs, boards, and public Facebook posts. It did not include Twitter yet. When you add Twitter to that model, it gets stronger, and most of the impact is on the day of, meaning the synchronous viewing experience, which anybody who uses Twitter and watches television, you know that's the explosion that happens synchronously with the show. So lots more to come. When you look at it on a show-by-show level, it's very tough because we didn't have X Factor launching in the U.S. without Twitter, right? We have no control. So we're working on the bigger overarching story. I don't know if you saw the TV Guide study that came out a few weeks ago. Their findings are they have a 6,000 to 8,000 person panel, and they have it pretty representative of the TV viewing audience. It represents the general American audience. It represents average TV viewing hours, and they found that that 27% of folks who responded said social media had driven them to watch more live television. And it was framed in terms of because they didn't want to get spoilers, but I think it's also the other way to think about what drives you to live viewing is to participate in the shared experience. It's a whole nother visceral experience. And that was at 20% 2 years ago, so we're seeing it rise up. 17% of respondents had tried a show because of a social media impression, so actually driving the tune in or the sampling, and 31% watched more shows, like stuck with a show, exhibited loyalty because of the social media experience. So there's studies like that. There's lots of individual studies that our partners do, you know, across the board where they think they're able to tie it to tune in, but we don't have the nuanced answers yet, but we're working on them.
I actually think from a and this doesn't necessarily fit into, like, you know, how do we drive more ratings, but, like, also how do we build new businesses? It's, you know, the X factor is interesting with some assumptions as to, you know, do we have an audience that actually consumes the show through blogs and through, you know, content online, and perhaps that's a different business that they can consume. So is there a new business in the future? So it's like I look at it in a couple different ways.
Yeah, I think speaking to the sponsorship piece of it, this year we saw with this show in particular a real inflection point where digital overall was more important than ever in actually closing business, and social was a key part of that digital conversation. And so to Chloe's point, you know, it is somewhat of an imperfect science. We don't have necessarily have a standardized measurement, whether it's measuring ratings impact or even how we value it. That's a bit of an ongoing experiment. But sponsors definitely wanted to get on board with this, and we took them along for the ride, and it was fun and successful all around. So I think we have a lot of goodwill with our partners, and they appreciated the way we were able to make them part of the conversation and not just slapping on a presented by at the end.
Yeah, you know? I think our app too will also start. I mean, it's like we get into more years and how people use apps and, you know, different experiences, you know, that accentuate the show, that you'll start, you know, will that actually give us more information as to who's viewing it in multiple platforms at once.
You can just see the Verizon logo up. It was up every time there was a call to action to vote. It was integrated into the voting page itself as well. We are also seeing substantial demand for the Twitter TV combination on air, online. You know, Sam's team works around that quite a bit, and definitely on Twitter as well. So the business case, I think people are very hungry to experiment and get in there, and it feels really robust, and that's fabulous because it means we can actually fund the experimentation it's going to take to crack the code on this.
Yeah, I think I'll just close by saying I think it's hard to determine the return on investment of social at the moment, but it seems to be clients are still willing to try and deploy these kind of mechanics irrespective of knowing what the dollar figure will be.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the tactics of moderation, whether it was at the Twitter level or mass relevance or at the network level, so that nothing that would run afoul of the FCC ends up on screen.
Are you talking about who is running the conversation on our official channels?
Well, just where it makes sense to have the moderation so that, you know, you don't get foul language on screen at any point.
That was something that we were able to. I mean, mass relevance gave us some great tools so that when messages were coming in, they'd already had filters that, because there were so many messages coming in per minute, it was like almost impossible to get through there. So Mass Relevance actually built us a great tool that we could be looking at what we were looking for very quickly, that took out all the crap. And also when, for fairness reasons, because we couldn't be displaying tweets that were calling to action to a specific contestant, we were able to take those out right away and just filter, you know, be able to look at the ones that we wanted to consider to go up on screen.
Yeah, it's a blend. There's pre-moderation built into most of our aggregation systems. There is post-moderation. We have an agency that keeps an eye on this stuff. And then there's also the guardrails I mentioned before, just to make sure that the people, like the contestants, are aware of the landmines and how to avoid them, so that hopefully by hitting all those, we're creating a nice, safe feed.
Yeah, the execution that Joe was talking about was actually one where we actually came back from commercial and Steve threw to the big screen where there was some tweets on there. Obviously, everybody was nervous about what those tweets would be, what the content would be, but not just from a cursing or anything like that. They just wanted them to be good. So we needed to figure out a solution real time where we could create like a queue of ones that we thought would be good, and then the producers could then select which ones they wanted. And what it ended up looking like was an application on an iPad that we just had in front of them in the control room. and they said, oh, we want this one, this one, this one, and then that got fed into the computer that we use to pump the visualization into the screen.
I would just note that curation is so critical with Twitter. It's why we invested a lot of time in building up and working with Mass Relevance to build a really easy, great UI and a simple curation platform. And then it's up to our TV partners to figure out the different times to use it, how to use it, how to capture the full conversation while only showcasing a small amount of it, all that stuff. So curation is key. And you'll see within Twitter itself, our Discover tab is algorithmic curation in the search results now. You have top tweets. It's a filtered set. So something we all need to get a lot better at. We're only at the beginning of it.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi. Great panel. I've got a project set up at UTA right now that my partner and I are ready to take out over the next month to pitch out. And unfortunately, it doesn't have a live component, so we're trying to figure out how much of the social to build in as we take it out. And what do you think, I guess, I want to ask, what do you think in terms of setting up those social sort of apparatuses, versus letting the conversation happen organically? And again, ours doesn't have a live component, so as it rolls out, do we just sort of build those in, let them happen? Because I think it's a concept that will get people talking, but do we sort of force it upon them?
Well,
or just let them?
Yeah, force them.
Do it early.
Well, as we learned, you know, from this example, whether it's live or not, I think showing that that there is a conversation going on, whether it's they go to the site and see that conversation, or we have clients that are bringing live tweets over tape shows. Mm-hmm. So there is the opportunity to if everyone on the East Coast is watching that scripted or taped show at the same time, you can bring live content over it and sort of showcase that there's a conversation going on. Right. Always putting the hashtag on the show, all those things makes, you know, a ton of sense, and I think that's a common best practice. But what we see is that by reflecting the conversation back, you pull more people in, and you have this building effect. And so the first people that tweet, they see themselves, others see them, they say, I want my 5 seconds of fame, or I want to be part of that conversation, and then it starts to build. So there's this, you know, it'd be nice to put some numerics around it, but I believe there's this net present value effect of getting it really 360 degree integrated in the beginning, because this audience starts to build, and I think the social shows become more social and build an audience that way.
I'm surprised Chloe's not talking about Flock to Unlock.
Flock to Unlock, though, is because the payoff, because there's a payoff, you could, you kind of want that possibly to be live, but there's lots you can do in a tape show. So obviously the hashtag, as Sam mentioned, live tweeting by your talent to make it feel more live.
Thought of that, and I didn't know like if that was
absolutely drives of, absolutely drives like, tune in drives attention drives conversation almost as effectively as a single hashtag. We haven't compared it to creative calls to action plus a hashtag, which is where you get from the doubling to the 10x is when you add that creative call to action, you know, because people want to know what to say. They need to be prompted.
Sure.
But live tweeting, more and more, you'll see, you know, CBS launches with the Tweet Week. We did Grammys live tweeting. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of ways to use live tweeting effectively. And ideally, the talent, it's in their best interest to drive the tune in and build their own story. You can also do parallel storylines. Community did a parallel storyline with their episode around Annie's move, where each character extended the story onto Twitter, and they timed the tweets perfectly so as they went off screen in their scene, then some hilariously odd tweet would come up that extended the story. So, you know, Chevy Chase's character kept tweeting, Siri, is this on, you know? So very much in line with their characters. There's a lot of stuff we look at. If you go to media.twitter.com, we have a bunch of best practices around that. And there, even in a tape show, you can do a flock to unlock. What Jill's referring to, you can imagine, for instance, you have some sort of end to the show where, let's say, someone wins. The flock to unlock, the concept is, hey, if we hit 200,000 tweets, something happens. And the something is the creative challenge that the show has to figure out. That something could be, okay, we have a winner. That winner, it doesn't change the winner, but maybe there was a prize and the prize doubled because there was a certain number of tweets, or there was a donation check to charity, or X number of things can come up. So there's a bunch you can do depending on how, you know, which direction you want to go.
Yeah, even if it's just unlocking bonus online content, can be companion stuff that way. And my joke about forcing it early is, you know, you don't really want to force it, if you really make a concerted effort to think it through, there's probably something there. So it's good to be trying to be mindful of it early on rather than trying to chase the bus later.
Yeah, because I don't want to say, you want to talk about this, you really do, instead of just letting it happen. And then
there are mechanisms you can do, whether they're stunty, like one example would be for Glee, we did what we called tweet peats, and we actually, during a repeat of Glee, we had the cast live tweeting, and it came up on screen in a lower third.
Yeah.
Not something you'd necessarily want to do every week, but fun nonetheless for an event type of thing. And then there are other ways to just bring a sense of community to, whether it's going out to commercial and you ask an opinion poll, and then coming back from commercial, you give the payoff. It doesn't even have to be real time necessarily, but ideally it would stimulate real time conversation.
Sure, sure.
It's also unintentionally a way to get unsolicited opinions about your creation.
Yeah.
Which we got a lot of.
Hashtag everyone's a critic. Yeah.
Glee's a great example to study how they've used Twitter, I think. Very Glee.
Yeah.
I think Glee. Fox and Glee have done an amazing job with that property.
But, I mean, the conversation is going to happen on Twitter no matter what you do.
Sure.
Trust me.
Right.
Every single TV show has a conversation happening on Twitter. So it's not about forcing. It's about conducting it. Are you going to amplify and shape it? Don't be worried about prompting them. They'll respond. And they're going to talk even if you don't.
I imagine they will. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And that was actually kind of a nice lead into what I'm about to ask you. But I was, I've always said, like, the real power, the snapshot of the real power of your brand on things like Twitter is how many people are having conversations about you, whether or not you're there, and
five
that aren't using the stuff that you orchestrate, like the hashtags and your fan base, you know, that kind of thing, people who are tweeting at you or things like that, or your followers. So I was wondering if you did any, have you done any testing on, like, how much of that conversation is going on, well, that's completely outside of all the stuff you're orchestrating, you know, sort of subtracting out the stuff that you're orchestrating to see how much,
how much
power that is?
I mean, listen, it's like we can be messaging out, but when we're not on air, those people really want to have the conversation regardless. I mean, like, if I tweeted something, I'm not forcing you to talk to me. Or I'm not forcing you to go to the web and look at the content. You know, it's like, that's something you want to engage in aside from the show, you know, on those 5 days a week. So I think just that in context alone, and when you're seeing that volume easily equal what's going on in show, is pretty significant.
I think it's hard, you know, it's hard to do a control, but some of the things you learn about the 600% increase when you had the visualization, that if had that not been up there, you wouldn't have seen that spike. And so sort of the integration, the visual integration, the fact that it is sort of two-way, people feel it's two-way, we've seen again and again lift incrementally to what the fact that their conversation would have already happened.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if you, like, you looked and, like, okay, minus that spike, what was the conversation?
What's
the power of this thing?
So we did those studies 14 months ago, because at 14 months ago, now it's hard to find, like, hashtags are kind of in a lot of places. So 14 months ago, when this was just starting and we had some controls, we were able to get shows that were mid-season to add a hashtag, or mid-season to add the call to action to the handle. Or in the case of Jeff Probst with Survivor, he had, you know, two seasons within a 12-month period almost, and one without live tweeting, one with live tweeting. So the data, when we say you can have a 2x increase in the conversation on Twitter just by putting a hashtag on air, that comes from those studies. It was a before and after. You know, 50,000 tweets, 100,000 after putting the hashtag on air. The 10x comes from, what if you add a creative call to action? How can you really drive the conversation there? So we have good data that says, you know, yes, it's there, but you can easily double, if not, get up into the tenfold range for some creative integration.
Time for one more question.
Oh, we got two.
We got two? Okay.
Hi, guys. I'll try and make this quick. I work at ITV, the spiritual home.
Thank you, ITV.
X Factor.
We love you.
I'm a user experience designer there on our in-house team. And we don't have Twitter voting yet. And I'm really hoping we do this season. But we have a very, very mature Twitter audience in the UK, as you well know. So my question is, were there any colossal fuck-ups that happened that
so
you
would,
could
would
tell,
we tell you?
You could tell me about.
I think out of time.
And then we won't make them.
Thanks, everybody. At least not on our
security.
Side. I'm out.
which
with the voting,
Were there any big mistakes with either the websites or
the
publishing tweets or the voting? Or because
I wouldn't say colossal is the word. I think, you know what, it's like you
No, not even that long.
I will say on the topic of voting, we bring a lot of rigor to that process. It's incredibly important to us. Conspiracy theorists aside, it's a very fair and buttoned up process. And so we would not have gone out with it if we didn't have absolute confidence in its technical integrity. Mm-hmm. So, no.
It got vetted by more lawyers.
It was. We have a third-party company called Telescope, who does all of our tabulation. They're experts in participation media. They've been on Idol since the first season.
I guess I mean more from a PR perspective. Were there just any...
Oh, no, it was private voting, so there was no opportunity for...
Yeah, we didn't... That's
why it was private.
You mean for people scraping data or anything like that?
That kind of thing. And I guess also that voting website that you had, the decision to make that a full-width website, were people voting...
It worked on mobile as well.
Were they voting on clients? Were they just using their... Have you got any data around that in terms of...
Not that we can share, but people, that website also worked for mobile. It was adapted, so you'd have an easy and great experience on mobile because most people are using mobile in front of TV, not their laptops at this point, especially the younger generation. But, you could also just DM your vote. You didn't have to. We saw a mix, especially towards the end, where certainly people were going to the website, but they were just using DMs straight from their own apps, just straight from the Twitter app. Most people use a Twitter app, whether it's Twitter.com or Twitter for iPhone, Twitter for Android, etc., Twitter for BlackBerry. So we worked very closely with Telescope, very closely. It was nerve-wracking on our end to know the level at which we had to meet their standards, and so we had product on our end doing lots of tests and lots of checking in. Telescope is now an official partner of ours, so we can continue to work with them.
If you only knew before you started talking to us.
What was that?
If you only knew all the pieces you had to go through.
That's right. So, it went smoothly. This is what working closely together and when vetting it for all of these needs, and it is a high bar to get over, but we got there.
I think the one compromise is, Chloe, I mentioned it earlier, is just the fact that because of the fact that we cannot broadcast the real-time vote because of the whole concern around it being perceived as predictive, the DM execution was not our ideal.
Yeah.
So in that way, we had to make some compromises. So it wasn't our dream scenario, but I think in the context of that compromise, I think it was really successful.
Yeah.
And the network wasn't kind of keen on more phone votes than DM?
No, it was additive. It didn't.
Okay.
Every year, we recently
different audience.
Figured out what we finally felt was a robust and secure way to do online voting, which for years we didn't do because we didn't believe we could do it without failing. Well, now we got to that place, and now that's a standard for us, and Twitter voting was just another extension of that. We see it as making the pie bigger as opposed to taking away from anything.
Okay. Yeah. Cool, thanks.
But I do think for the UK, you guys in Europe have a very different opportunity. It's a business model choice. You guys are charging people to vote, which is not the case in the US.
Do you not do that? We don't charge.
No, we don't do
that
in the US.
Okay. I want to get the gentleman. All right, last question.
Then I'll just boil it down really quickly. So let's say you're in for next season or a show that's similar to X Factor, let's just say.
Never.
What's the next big win? What's the one singular thing that you think will take the show to the next level, whatever that rating metric?
Tune in September 2012 on Fox. I think that we set just a going pace, but it's like I feel that we need to do twice what we did last year, or it's not good enough. It's got to be
All right, Claire, you got something to share?
Me personally, speaking on behalf of Psycho.
Here's the future of voting on TV: live, real time, public flash voting. So eliminations or saves on Twitter in 5 minutes in real time.
Yeah.
Someone's going to do it this year, 2012.
Season three.
As everybody else on the panel.
Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Thank you. Real time.